Albert Schweitzer once said, "Think occasionally of the suffering of which you spare yourself the sight." Welcome to episode 24 of Our Hen House, a place to find our way to change the world for animals. In today's episode, I am coming to you from the City of Roses, Portland, Oregon.
I love Portland.
Where I'm knee-deep in voodoo donuts and food carts. On today's show, Marianne, who is still in New York City, where she is busy trying to manage the heat wave that has come over the Big Apple, will share some very exciting news about a letter to the editor she wrote.
Dear editor, fuck you.
Joining us today is Michelle Schwegman and Josh Hooten, the owners of Herbivore Clothing here in Portland, and two of the co-founders of the Let Live Foundation. The Let Live Foundation is, of course, the group organizing the conference where I'm speaking, the very reason I'm on the left coast in the first place. Michelle and Josh will talk all about the importance of creative activism, which happens to also be the theme for this weekend's conference, as well as the perks of raising a vegan child. In our news section, we will discuss the endangered species status that is being sought for a very special kind of sea life. We'll also talk about a cupcake competition on the Food Network's show Cupcake Wars and why vegans have reason to celebrate. In our review section, I will be reviewing the movie Bold Native, a fiction feature film about an animal liberator wanted by the United States government for domestic terrorism. My name is Jasmine Singer, and I'll be your co-host today in our hen house, along with my lovely lady, Marianne Sullivan. We are delighted that you have joined us today in our hen house, where I returned from our trip to Vermont just in time to turn around and head west. And I have little doubt that sweet Marianne is at home basking in the freedom of not having me around to nag her about things like doing the dishes. Now please, pull up some hay. Let's get squawking. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Marianne Sullivan.
Hello, my little Portland girl.
I'm in Portland.
Far, far away.
I am far, far away, or you're far, far away, depending upon which way you look at it. But we're actually doing this interview via Skype. So if it sounds like you're on the phone, it's because you kind of are.
This is a bi-coastal interview.
It is. As long as it's not like a bipolar interview, I'm happy.
Might be that as well.
It's very possible. So I'm in Portland, you're in New York, and back in New York, you have some very exciting news.
Yes, I can seldom remember being this excited. I mean, it's just a personal, but, you know, what the hell. We mentioned last week that I had written a letter to the Times. Of course, I just dashed it off because I never think that anything's going to get published. And it was about that huge animal cruelty article in the Sunday magazine, and they're publishing my letter. I'm so excited.
Yes, that is so amazing. You are being published in the New York Times Magazine, and not only are you being published in the New York Times Magazine, but it's basically about veganism and meat eating and people just being ignorant fucks to the fact that their animals...
Yes, that's exactly what I said in my letter. People are ignorant fucks. That's the way you get published.
Well, tell us about the letter. Tell us about the letter.
Well, it was... As I think we talked about last week, the article was a very strong article, and it had lots of examples of cruelty to animals and how devastating this is in the home and to children and to children who witness it, and how it's a primary problem in domestic violence situations. And it just didn't make... And which was great. It was a great article, but it really didn't make the connection between other kinds of violence against animals. And so that was basically what I wrote the letter about, that they talk, and I thought this line just really got to me when I read it, that children who witness violence against animals suppress their feelings of kindness or caring to the pet, the companion animal, because they have to. It was a self-preservation method. Otherwise, they would be too devastated if they allowed themselves to feel any empathy, because right. they have no control of the situation, and so they have to get rid of these feelings. And humans, as we know, are just have incredibly intricate psychological mechanisms, and so they enter into this denial. And I suggested that that's pretty much what everybody does every time they sit down to eat. They know something terrible has happened to this animal. They know it's an animal. They're not ignorant of those facts, but they put that information somewhere, and it's just as it has an effect on children who do that when they see violence against a pet. It has an effect on anyone who does it.
Right.
And I was just astounded that they decided to publish it. They almost didn't publish it because I'm such an idiot, but when we were traveling up to Vermont, I basically didn't answer my phone because I am very irresponsible
you
about
never
answering
answer
my phone.
Phone
I know.
I'm surprised that people call it. So, you know, there's quite a few people who call me on my cell phone if they want to get in touch with you.
It's bad. I know. It makes me sound like a crotchety old lady who can't deal with this modern technology. But cell phones, I don't know. It's just such a pain in the ass. I'm just not a cell phone person.
So they called
and they called me because they had edited the letter, and they're not supposed to publish it without getting your permission, and they didn't get my permission in time, and I was just panicked when I finally opened my email. It was the day we went to Vermont. You know, we were traveling. I was relaxed. Mm-hmm. I was stupid. So I checked my email, and she said that it was closing, the paper was closing, or whatever they say, as of quite a while before I got the email, and so I frantically called her, and she said because there were very few edits, I fortunately had written a short letter, because there were very few edits, she had just taken a chance and left it in. Thank God.
Yeah.
I would have killed myself.
Yeah, she was, I know, cause actually, do you remember, at first we were like elated, like bouncing off the ceiling, and then you noticed that she said, you must get in touch with me.
Yeah.
And we were like, completely crestfallen. We were just so upset about the whole thing.
The range of emotion was astounding. And then, of course, you got furious at me, and rightly so, because I just signed my name and I didn't sign our hen house, which was dopey. But you write a letter to the Times, you don't actually think they're going to publish it.
Right. No, I know.
I didn't plan it very carefully.
I know. No, it's true. If you had put our hen house in your closing, it would have been amazing. But the good news is, when at the end of the day, your letter is going to be in New York Times Magazine. And
that is the good news.
Yeah, it's great.
People will be enlightened by my brilliant three sentences of prose.
And hopefully they will Google your name and find our hen house and change the world.
Right.
So,
or send us money, or do something useful.
You know, speaking of changing the world, I'm here in Portland, and it's amazing to me, like, everywhere I look, how many people are changing the world. It's just so inspiring.
Well, that's nice to hear. I wish I was in Portland, because here in New York, everybody's just sweating.
Portland is really groovy.
Yeah, it's a great town.
And I am two blocks away from a parking lot that is full of food carts.
Yeah.
Vegan marked on the side of all of them. Don't you wish that we had more food carts in New York? We have one, and that's about it.
Well, one vegan food cart.
Right, right. But
I wish our hot dog stands had vegan hot dogs like they do in Vancouver.
Yeah. The other day when I was on the plane coming here, I was listening to a book on tape that I had kind of randomly purchased just because I wanted to listen to something. And the main character is a vegan chef.
That's just crazy.
I know.
You had no idea?
I had no idea. It's called Promises to Keep. And that being said, I kind of hate the book. I do not recommend it at all. But the reason why is because it's sort of like one of those things where it follows this vegan chef, and then it'll mention a friend of hers, and then the next chapter is about her friend, and then that'll mention, like, that person's cousin, and the next chapter is about that cousin person. Like, it doesn't really have that much to do with the vegan chef at the end of the day. But I'll tell you the weirdest thing is that they begin each chapter with listing a recipe, and the recipes that they're listing are not all vegan. So,
oh, that sucks.
Yeah. But other than that, she was talking about how there was a whole scene where she was talking about how she was really skeptical about veganism, but then when she tried it, she'd never felt better, she never looked better, she never tasted more delicious food. So I was like, okay, this is like one of the top-selling fiction books right now. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I don't recommend it.
But I'm glad it doesn't matter. I mean, we don't have to read it. Right. It's good that other people, if other people are reading it, I'm glad they're hearing about vegan chefs.
So, is that all we have today for our ramblings?
We're rambling separately. I guess we're just not as productive when we don't ramble together.
Oh, sweetie.
I know. I'm rambling through life on our own.
Oh, I'll be home in 6 days, and then it's Kansas for us, baby.
Oh, boy. I'm looking forward to going to Kansas. I have so little experience going to the Midwest. And we've been hearing from your mother that they have great vegan food there and a great Whole Foods,
right?
Which I guess they have everywhere, great Whole Foods, but right near where we're staying. And I'm excited. Yeah. And we know that Kansas City has a great vegan activist presence.
Yeah.
So at least those things are taken care of. And we've had it on good authority that it's a very beautiful city. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's like 112 degrees or something, but
I have a new
I'm sure everything's air-conditioned.
I have a new niece there who's like 2 weeks old now, so she'll be cute. I mean, when in doubt, there's always cute babies.
Yes, babies are generally cute.
I got her a onesie that says, I love my aunt and all of her tattoos.
But very cute.
So anyway.
You can get a onesie that says anything, apparently.
Speaking of Portland, by the way, we are talking to Josh Hooten and Michelle Schweigman today. Actually, I'm talking to them. You are not, because the interview was pre-recorded and you were not around at that time. But we have had them on via video, and they are just rad, and they're here. They run Herbivore Clothing. They are co-founders of the Let Live Foundation, and I'm excited about having them on. So I wanted to have them talk about all of the veganacity that Portland has to offer.
I'm totally excited, though I'll be a little jealous listening to Portland veganacity stories. Mm. But it's kind of fun getting to listen to the interview when I didn't do it.
Right.
a whole new experience.
Well, let's. Why don't we listen to it now?
Okie doke.
Michelle Schweigman and Josh Hooten own the Herbivore Clothing Company in Portland, Oregon. Since 2002, Herbivore has designed fashion and attitude for vegans around the world. Housed in the world's only all-vegan mini mall, Herbivore is where vegans shop for clothing, accessories, cookbooks, and anything else their cruelty-free conscience demands. Their goal is to make the world realize that vegan is really the most obvious way to live. Welcome to our hen house, Josh and Michelle.
Thank you, Jasmine.
So excited to have you here. Now, though I like to have people stay in the illusion that we actually record our podcasts live, I guess I'll just bash that illusion right now because I'm about to ask you about the upcoming Let Live conference, which will be happening in real time as this podcast airs. So going with the idea that we're actually currently in the future, did I do a good job?
You are so, this is great. This is the best. Everyone loved it.
Okay.
It sounds like we're on the Jetsons.
Exactly. Oh, good. I'm so glad. Josh, can you tell me a bit about the Let Live conference?
So it's this coming weekend, which probably won't sound right if people hear this after the fact, but it's the 25th through the 27th of June, and it's in Portland, Oregon at Portland State University, and it's our third one. It's an annual conference, and this year is really going to be really fun. We try to keep it really community-based, and we try to make sure that we're all sort of accepting each other's differences and tactics and approaches and accept that we all have a common goal instead of letting some of the things that pop up at other conferences and in our movement get in the way of our unity. So to that end, we have a pretty good set of speakers and talks, as always, but we also do other things. Like our Friday night opening event is the Animal Rights Spelling Bee. Last year we did karaoke. Saturday night, the after party is at Portobello Vegan Trattoria restaurant here in Portland, and there's an art show and a DJ, and so it's very heavy on the issues during the day, and then after that, it's very much about community building and making connections with real people instead of just ideas.
That's so exciting. I love the Let Live conference. I think it's, I mean, I feel comfortable saying I think it's just the grooviest one out there. I just love the energy. And when if you should get bored, you could just entertain yourself by looking around at everybody's tattoos, which is awesome. Now, Josh, this year's theme for the conference is creative activism. What was the impetus for focusing on creative activism? And can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean when you say creative activism?
Yeah. Well, you know, times are changing. Things are different. We have different tools available to us as activists and people doing outreach. And I know that I've been to several kind of old school outreach type things, like protests and so forth, and I didn't really feel like I was getting very much done. And it doesn't mean those things can't work. It means that they work in some settings, and sometimes you need different tools depending on what the job is. So our goal with this year at Let Live is to sort of get people thinking about more new ways of doing stuff, lots of stuff with internet tools, lots of different kinds of outreach. There's all kinds of we have panels with filmmakers and with musicians and with graphic designers, and then there's all sorts of talks that are about different kinds of taking traditional outreach ideas and kind of making them more modern and more appealing to people. You know, it's really easy for people to see a protest from two blocks away and write it off because they know that it's a bunch of people doing the same thing that they think they already know what that type of vibe is about. Mm-hmm. So how do we communicate with people who are kind of burned out on the things that we've been doing forever? And that's kind of what we're going to be getting people to focus on, is just new ways of communicating.
Yeah, times really are different now than they ever have been. I think even in the last year, so much more has opened up, so much more potential for different, new, unique ways of advocating for animals. Exciting time as long as we jump on that bandwagon. One of my favorite ways to advocate for animals these days is through for-profits, and I just love that we can spread compassion while making a living at the same time. Can you tell me a bit about your store, Herbivore, and how you use it to spread the vegan message?
Well, everything, I sure can. Everything in the store is obviously vegan. And the store itself, just by its location in a row of shops that are all vegan, the four businesses here, the bakery, Food Fight, the tattoo shop, and us. So just by our presence, I think we, you know, people know this as the vegan mini mall, or, you know, they know that there's something different going on here. There are always people outside, always bikes lined up outside. So just the average person who drives down Stark Street, I think their curiosity is piqued. And so many times a week, people are like, I've been meaning to come in here for, you know, 2 years, and I finally walked in, and this is so interesting. And, you know, they have no idea that this is a store full of vegan cookbooks and animal rights message shirts and, you know, non-leather goods and stuff like that. They just think it's a cool-looking shop. So in that regard, it's outreach. And then for people that are making a switch to a vegan lifestyle, we are very much like a support network, and we spend a lot of time talking with people about their choices, or helping people, you know, maybe come to the realization, or reminding people that they need to be vegan again, or that it's good for them to be vegan again, good for animals. And we just help people make that transition make it normal for their life, help them develop new habits, whether it's through cooking or just, you know, talking about this lifestyle and making it, helping everyone remember that this is actually what normal is. Mm-hmm. It's not normal to participate in, you know, hideous cruelty and suffering just so that you can have what you want to have for lunch. That's not normal. But making a compassionate choice is. Yeah. So that's what we do. And it's fun all the time. All these amazing people every week with stories that are so inspiring, from them curing their diabetes to, you know, the doctor telling them their cancer is gone, to people losing weight, to just people feeling like they are part of a community of like-minded individuals. And it's great.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I guess I take it from what you said that it's not just vegans who shop there.
It's not. And, you know, oftentimes people are, you know, brought in by someone that is vegan or vegetarian. There are a lot of people that are vegetarian here that come in and, you know, they... It's interesting, a lot of times people somewhat apologize for that, and it's such a great way to say, like, why are you apologizing for being vegetarian? You know, maybe you need to rethink your decision. And, it, you know, that happens all the time, and people just kind of are, maybe come in at this time in their life where they're open to hearing a complete stranger just honestly ask them a question, because that sometimes is what it takes, you know. You get in out of your comfort zone for just a moment, and you're able to see something that you hadn't been able to see before because you had all your guards up. So, you know, we do get the vegetarians that come in, or people that come in with their family, and, you know, the parents are not even, you know, remotely friendly to vegetarianism, but they really like this wallet, and it's super durable, and how cool, and oh, it's made of a recycled tire, or, you know, we can tell them about where it was made and who owns the company, and that makes it a more personal experience, and so we can, you know, get them regular folks to buy non-leather goods and stuff like that too.
Yeah, that's really great. And it's very much of a destination. When I'm in Portland, I spend most of my time just hanging out there. It's a really great
spot. Oh, I know.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I'll see you tomorrow.
Something that I really believe in, and it's something that's my own personal belief, is that, you know, we obviously choose to live this kind of lifestyle. And I think it's really a gift that we can be role models in a way for new vegans or for omnivores out there, because they can come in my store, walk past my store, and take a look at me and the people shopping here, and listen to us speak about our beliefs and about what we purchase and why we sell things, and you know, and how we do research on the quality of these goods and the quality of the work environment of the people who are making them, and, you know, raising vegan children and having vegan pregnancies. And people hear the depth of, like, thought that goes into our lifestyle, and it's really impressive to them, and to just, you know, the average person. And I think that it's a privilege to be able to share that, and I think it's a responsibility, though, to, like, live a good life and be healthy, and be, you know, show people that vegans aren't these unapproachable, judgmental people. And I think that's just something that I like to be part of, and I love it when customers come in and sort of have that same kind of feeling. Is that making sense?
Totally. I think that makes sense. And not only does it make sense for what you're saying with your store specifically and being role models, but it also goes back to what Josh was saying a moment ago, because the only way that we're going to be in this for the long run is if we take care of ourselves and each other and just really be the best we can be. So,
yep.
Definitely. Now, Josh, by the time this podcast airs, I will undoubtedly be vegan donut deep in Portland. And it seems that Portland has taken over as one of the, if not the, vegan capitals of the world. Can you briefly describe what all of the vegan fuss is about when it comes to Portland?
Briefly describe,
or take as much time as you want. I'll just put the mic down and go get a cup of coffee.
Go walk a dog.
Well, let's see it. I'll just walk you through what you could do on a typical day in Portland. You could go see my friend Gus. He's my vegan barber, and he gives me a shave and a haircut. And then you could go to a number of locations of your choice to get vegan donuts, to get you ready for your vegan brunch somewhere, of which you can go to several. Then you could go, if you've got a little bit of room, you could always go get vegan corn dogs at Hungry Tiger 2 around the corner. After you stop in for coffee at the Vegan Cafe, the Red and Black. On your way down to Sweet Pea, where you could get a really good vegan sandwich because it's an all-vegan bakery, then you could stop in our store next door and get your vegan belts and wallets and t-shirts and cookbooks. Well, then you head next door to Food Fight for the vegan grocery store. get a tattoo at the Scapegoat next to that, which is an all-vegan tattoo shop. All this, of course, being done on your bicycle that you got fixed up at Velo Shop, the vegan bike, the vegan-owned bike shop. Then you could go over to Sip, the vegan the vegan milkshake truck.
Oh my God.
And you could have a kale smoothie instead of a milkshake.
You
That's
could.
Delicious.
You could. And since you're in that part of town, you might as well just go to Portobello, the vegan Italian restaurant. On your loop back, go to Blossomy Lotus, the all-vegan, other all-vegan restaurant that we love. And don't forget to get a burrito at Los Gorditos. It has a whole vegan menu as well. It goes on and on.
Oh, my God, you're such a show-off.
You app. No.
Well, actually, one thing that I like about that, everything you're saying about Portland, and I noticed this in Vancouver too, and maybe just the whole Pacific Northwest, is that the main difference that I see between, say, New York City and Portland or Vancouver is that though I think New York City might have more vegan restaurants, the fact of the matter is that you could really go anywhere, even a non-vegan place in Portland mm-hmm. or Vancouver, and get a vegan meal.
Yeah, some of our favorite food in this town isn't at vegan restaurants, and we like to eat Middle Eastern a lot, and there's lots of good Ethiopian, and a lot of it says vegan on the menu, which is really nice. You know, you don't have to think about it too hard, so
yeah.
It takes that kind of low-level ambient stress out of your life where you're like, oh, God, is this cooked in something that I don't want, and so forth. It's nice to not have to worry about that stuff anymore.
Yeah. Oh, God, okay. I'm hungry and thirsty and needing a new wallet suddenly. Can either of you tell our listeners a little bit about your effervescent, adorable, brilliant, hilarious, vegan 5-year-old daughter, Ruby?
I'll let Michelle tell you all the tales of what she said to our family on our recent trip.
Our little activist, Miss Ruby Bird, she we have always... She's obvious.
She's 5 and a half, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
And she's 5 and a half. And she's been vegan her whole life. And we've always been very honest with her that the reason that we don't eat animals is because we don't want to cause them any pain or suffering. We don't want to hurt anybody or anything. And so it's just been a very simple, basic thing. I don't want to hurt something, so I'm not going to eat it. And she's now old enough and articulate enough to articulate those ideas. And we were just visiting with my omnivorous parents, and she would at every meal ask what they were eating, and undoubtedly it was meat, and unfortunately, and she would say, don't eat animals. You don't need to eat animals. It hurts them. It's not good for your body. And then my mom was making eggs, and Ruby was like, are those chicken eggs? She whispered to me. And I nodded my head yes. And she whispered back to me, should we just put them away? Like, let's hide them from Oma so she won't know where they went, and then she can't eat them.
Aww.
And then when I said, well, you know, that might cause a little bit of a fuss. We don't want to be too overbearing to Oma. Then she just proceeded to say, ick. Ew, gross.
That's
as only a 5 and a half-year-old to get away with.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm 30 and a half, and I do that shit, and nobody listens.
They're just like, Jasmine's at it again. But she's very, very much, passionate about her beliefs, and she's spoken out to people at IKEA that were looking at cowskin rugs, and she's done this with my mom and dad. She's spoken up at her lunch table at her little preschool. And then really awesome things like her friends' parents that are not vegan families. The parents have said to me, just being around Ruby and around you guys has made us think so much more about what we eat, and we eat way less meat.
Yeah,
and that's
great.
Awesome. It's really cool. So,
yeah.
That's and she can rock the monkey bars and do the high dive.
Oh,
so
good.
Come on.
Well,
bring
probably
it on.
Because she's, full of such good health because she's a little vegan. Now, do you
superhuman.
Think that kind of outspokenness and deep understanding about the vegan ethic is due to all of the activists in Ruby's life, or do you think it's something that's coming from her inside?
Well, the thing about it that I think is really interesting is that we've like Michelle said, we've always been very honest about it, but we spare her all the really, you know, the really gory stuff. We just say it hurts, and we have a dog, and we always just tell her we wouldn't hurt our dog, and, you know, it hurts the same as when you get hurt, when you fall down, and, you know, you get a boo-boo, and it bleeds, and, you know, these things hurt, and it hurts them just the same. And she's been to Farm Sanctuary a bunch of times, and she's been to some other sanctuaries around here, like Lighthouse, and she's met a bunch of these animals. So it's not an abstraction like it is for a lot of adults. I mean, I didn't meet farm animals until I was an adult, until I was long after I was vegan. So it was always this kind of intellectual and philosophical abstraction that was like, oh, this is the right thing to do because I've thought about it, and I've educated myself. But for her, it's just way more concrete. It's like, these are these animals right here in front of me, and I love them, and they're gentle, and they're kind, and I don't want to hurt them. So I think that it's, we don't really talk about it all that often.
We talk about being vegan all the time.
Yeah, but we don't really try to explain things to her. She just, you know, kids understand stuff. It's like we have all these barriers we put up as adults, and we try to find ways around the truth, and we try to find ways to keep doing things that we maybe should think harder about. But little kids, you know, it's the truth, and she knows it, and it's not something she tries to find a loophole for. She just says, oh, okay, this is the truth. These are the animals. I don't want to hurt them. It's case is closed, you know?
And she's not exposed to things like, you know, McDonald's, and she's never been to a place like that. She doesn't know what a chicken McNugget is. She doesn't have a lot of the typical sort of consumer exposure that a lot of kids do. So she doesn't, you know, I'm sure someday she's going to be like, holy crap, there's this place called McDonald's, and they, you wouldn't believe it. They have these meals, and they give you a toy, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
She's
a special kid. She's a perfect advertisement for kid vegans, I think. Now, lastly, Michelle, I know that you're originally from Salina, Kansas, and I have got to tell you, Kansas and even Salina more specifically, weirdly enough, is a recurring theme with our podcast's guests.
And Salina is?
I swear to God, the majority of those that we've interviewed in the past 23 weeks have Kansas in common, and a lot, Salina has come up at least three times. Now, what on earth is going on in Kansas and that's creating all of these vegans?
You know, you know what's going on? A lot of animal terror is what's going on. I don't know. Some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life are from Kansas. My best friend, me. seriously, some great people.
Yeah.
So there is something wonderful about Kansas in a lot of regards. I think there's a lot of space for people to think and not, you know, be disturbed.
Yeah.
Literally, there is.
Something's going on there, because it's really like every week Kansas comes up again, and it's like, okay, something. I'm actually going to Kansas in a few weeks, so I'll have to check out the water or something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I want to know more about who these people are, but we can do that in a minute.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you both so much. I could just talk to you forever and ever and ever, and I will when I see you mañana. And
mañana.
Or after this podcast airs, it will be yesterday, which I don't know how to say in Spanish, but I will learn it.
Ayer.
Oh, okay. Ayer. Thank you for this Spanish lesson. And of course, people could find you both online, either through herbivoreclothing.com, and also Let Live is online. What's the Let Live URL again?
LetLiveFoundation.org.
Okay, great. And there's Facebook pages and fun things like that. And I think Josh might have the funniest Facebook status updates of anyone I've ever met in my life. So become both of their Facebook friends and things like that. And thanks again so much. I hope that next time I get to talk to Ruby on our podcast. That would be rad.
That would be awesome.
She would be a really good interview.
She would be. She'd be a great interview. So thank you so much for joining us today in our hen house. And I better
Thank
get back
you.
To the conference now.
Get to work. Thank you, Jasmine.
Thanks,
okay,
Jasmine.
Take care.
Bye.
And, of course, you can find several of the Let Live talks, including last year's conference, as well as their speaker series, and I'm sure that they'll be posting this year's as well, on the Vimeo page for Let Live, which you could find through the Let Live website, letlivefoundation.org. I highly recommend watching those. They're really incredible. And with that, let's get into some news now, shall we?
Well, shall we start with the good news or the not so good news? Actually, there's a few pieces of good news this week.
Yeah, let's start with something good.
All right. Well, the really good news is about Chloe, Chloe Coscarelli, and she was a contestant on some show on Food Network, which I've never seen, called Cupcake Wars.
Mm, and that sounds delicious.
I know, it sounds like a show I should avoid watching, since it will make me want to eat cupcakes. But she was, I guess they have a different contest every week, I'm not sure. But on this episode, she entered, she's all of 23, and she entered her vegan cupcakes, and lo and behold, they won.
Yeah, they were
the winning cupcakes.
That's fantastic.
Go Chloe. And as a result of her win, this was immediately after the win, she was given the honor, or whatever, of serving her cupcakes to a celebrity party run by OK Magazine in Beverly Hills.
Wow.
So, like, 1,000 vegan cupcakes were supplied. And imagine that all of those celebrities were exposed to these fabulous vegan cupcakes.
That's really wonderful. You know, it actually reminds me of a story. We were watching a clip of Ellen DeGeneres with Emily Deschanel, of course, the vegan star of Bones, on The Ellen Show. And they were talking about some cake that they were given as a reward for their 100th episode. And Ellen said, "Did you eat the cake?" And Emily said, No, I'm vegan. And then she said, "But they made me cupcakes." And you said they couldn't make her a cake. Like, she's,
I know,
Emily,
she's the star of the show. And they couldn't eat the vegan cake.
I know. It's just so frustrating. It was somewhat tangential, but it reminded me of that. And I am really excited to hear that this young woman won this. That's so cool.
Yeah, apparently the contest is, I guess you show up and you're given the particular challenge of the day, and they had to make cupcakes with aphrodisiac ingredients. The only one she mentions, not the recipe, but the name of it, are ginger nutmeg spice cupcakes, which do sound rather yummy, don't they?
Oh,
I love ginger.
I do, too. You're making me hungry now. Though, I don't know, ginger cupcakes sound muffin-y. I like my cupcakes with lots of frosting.
Okay. We'll stick to the traditional, the vegan traditional.
Yeah. What else?
All right, on to the bad news. Well, this is news everybody already knows. It's just that it's getting a little bit more attention. And it's two crises coming together at once, and it's about bluefin tuna. I think we've spoken about bluefin tuna before on the podcast because they're very threatened, and they're being destroyed by the sushi industry, particularly Japan. And they're this iconic, beautiful fish that people actually care about, unlike some fish. And the reason it's a double crisis is because apparently one of the primary spawning grounds for the bluefin tuna is the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were endangered before, they're unbelievably endangered now because nobody really knows what's happening, but those eggs may have been laid right around the oil spill, and if any of them come into contact with oil, that's that. And so they could lose a whole year spawning of bluefin, and there are very few spawning grounds left. So that's all pretty tragic. There's a huge story on the bluefin in this coming Sunday's New York Times. Not quite as big a deal as my letter, but still an important article. It's kind of an annoying article. It talks about, like, how beautiful and special and glorious these fish are. But, of course, it doesn't talk about not eating fish anymore. It just kind of implies we shouldn't maybe eat bluefin tuna, and talks about how all the less important fish we could substitute and that would be good to be farmed. So is not exactly on the right page, but it does have a lot of really good information in it for those interested in the bluefin. And the other news is that there's a petition has been filed, I think, for the Center on Biological Diversity to have the bluefin designated an endangered species, which would be great, but yeah. We'll see whether that will happen. Yeah. And so the news on bluefin is not good. I guess the good news is that attention is being paid. So the news is already bad, and a little bit more attention is being paid, but it's a pretty sad state still and all. And some other news is there are two actually interesting legislative pieces of news. One is the Crush Video Law, which is a very narrowed version of the law that got thrown out by the United States Supreme Court as an unconstitutional violation of the First Amendment a month or two ago. So they're now trying to pass a law that would be narrowly tailored to suit the First Amendment, and it has been introduced in the House, and it just passed the Judiciary Committee, so hopefully it will go to the House floor soon. So that's good. Mm-hmm. And the other news on the legislative front is the Puppy Uniform Protection and Safety Act. The acronym is, of course, PUPS. They love to come up with these acronyms for these laws that are cute. Has been introduced. This is a bill. I don't know whether it's identical to a bill that was introduced a few years ago and kind of went nowhere, but it sounds like it's very similar. And it would bring all commercial dog breeders under federal oversight. Right now, the Animal Welfare Act excludes, at least by regulatory fiat, it excludes breeders who sell directly to the public and breeders who sell over the internet, and which is, of course, a huge piece of the puppy business these days. And this bill would put them within the purview of the Animal Welfare Act. I guess one of the reasons for this is this scathing report that we spoke about that recently came out of the USDA about how poorly the Animal Welfare Act is enforced regarding puppy mills, which is kind of ironic that this bill seeks to have all of these additional puppy mills covered by the Animal Welfare Act, and apparently the USDA is doing a lousy job with the ones that it already covers. But still, it's important that these mills be covered, and at least then we can work on getting the Animal Welfare Act better enforced, and it would apply to all of these, especially the internet puppies, which has become a huge business. So a few interesting things going on the legislative front at the federal level, and we'll see what happens with that.
Wow. Is there anything else going on?
Well, I'm sure there are many things going on, but that's kind of all I have to talk about.
I kind of think the biggest news is your letter.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, come on. What news can compete?
I think it has the potential to change the world.
Well, people would just read it and pay attention to it. Of course, it would be easy. We would have an easy time if people would just pay attention to the truth, wouldn't we?
Right, exactly. Well, that was our news.
I'm so jealous of what you got to do last night in Portland.
Yeah, you should be. I went to see the Portland premiere of the movie Bold Native.
I want to see it so much.
Yeah, I was, when I was not busy weeping or laughing or, like, thinking that I was about to embarrass myself by, like, overly emoting out loud in front of everybody in the theater, I was really bummed that you weren't there, because it was really a life-changing experience, and I don't say that about many films. I don't feel that strongly about many films, but this film really hit me hard.
Yeah, as in any case, when a big book or movie comes out, it's so nerve-wracking to see whether one is going to like it. I'm excited that you really liked it. Yeah. I know you're not that comfortable doing reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're really kind of a gut reaction kind of gal.
Yeah.
You either like it or you don't like it. And I don't want you to give away the plot.
Yeah, I
know. But tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, well, I'm going to try, and I appreciate your saying that, because reviews don't actually come naturally to me, which is, you know, ironic, given my theater background and writing background. I'm not a great reviewer. But Bold Native.
So I do remember you reviewing that cheese a couple of weeks ago,
yeah,
and going on and on and on.
Don't remind me.
Vegan cheese, obviously. Vegan cheese. Bold Native is a lot better than vegan cheese. It's a feature film that is completely fiction, but a lot of it rings really true, and there are a lot of elements of it that aren't fiction because it blends together actors with real life people, including activists and lawyers. And it follows the story of Charlie Cranehill, who is an activist, an animal liberator, and he is wanted by the government for domestic terrorism. And it follows him emerging from really an underground movement to coordinate a nationwide plan as his dad tries to find him before the cops do. And simultaneously, it follows another activist, a woman who works for an animal welfare organization. And this woman, I swear, had to be based off of Erica Meyer from Compassion Over Killing. It almost looked like Erica. And it
well, then she must be very pretty, because Erica is certainly beautiful. Very lovely.
She was very lovely looking. And it follows this woman as well, and she's fighting within the system to include more, you know, quote, humane treatment of farmed animals. And so the movie really appeals to everyone and everyone's point of view, from abolitionists to welfarists. And
well, everyone's point of view in the animal section.
No, actually, you know, beyond that as well, there are characters like his father who really didn't get it. We all know people like that. And there were a lot of scenes where the activists were talking to various people who didn't get it. And that was a really brilliant move on the filmmaker's part because it really allowed for an educational element to come into the film.
And well, is it very heavy? It sounds like it might be very heavy with all the footage and
right, well,
education. And
that's an interesting point because it was actually one of the funniest movies I've ever seen as well. I mean,
really?
Was it heavy? Absolutely. I mean, I copiously wept. I really thought that I was going to be sobbing out loud, but I was also laughing out loud. There were a lot of comedy breaks. One of the main characters, Sonia, who is played by Sheila Vand, who plays Charlie's girlfriend, is absolutely hilarious, as is...
Well, that's great.
As is the character I Rock, played by Tanya Kaye.
And I Rock?
I Rock, because she rocks.
As in the country. Oh.
No.
I Rock.
It's funny that you should say as in the country, because that's what an ongoing joke in the movie is as well.
Oh.
These people are...
Don't give away the secrets.
Right, no, these...
How are their performances?
I'm just speechless. Joaquin Pastor, who played Charlie, was, I mean, he was like James Dean, I think. He
cool.
was absolutely, first of all, incredibly attractive and really talented. He brilliantly portrayed Charlie. He brilliantly portrayed everything he must be going through, and it reminded me very much of Year of the Dog in that way, which, of course, was the movie with Molly Shannon that you and I both
right.
Really
well, we both loved it, but many people did not. Do we have the same problem here, that animal rights activists come off as a little crazy?
Well, I mean, there's one character, I'm not going to give it away for you, but there's one character who you feel a little I'll speak for myself. Maybe other people disagree. There's one character who I felt uncomfortable with. You know, she, I thought, was probably insane, and I think that...
well, there are people in the animal protection movement,
right.
I guess. She does represent
but,
a certain
I mean,
faction.
This is the thing, like, she's definitely not into the human compassion side of things when it comes
mm-hmm.
to people in the animal agribusiness who exploit animals, and so... You get it. I mean, you understand where she's coming from, but there was maybe,
mm-hmm.
let's say 30 activists in the movie, and she was the only one who made me uncomfortable. But at the
okay.
same time, I totally understand why that particular scene where, you know, she was treating a human very abusively was in there, because it was just trying to show the juxtaposition of treating the animals that way. And in fact, during the Q&A with the filmmakers afterwards, that scene was brought up, and someone asked what the impetus for that scene was. And they said, you know, that they know it was a little, I might be paraphrasing what they're saying, but they said that they put it in there because they wanted to show, you know, that this kind of violence is egregious. And a lot of times you can only show that for people when you're associating it with a human.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that a lot of people will end up seeing this movie, you know, other than the usual suspects, i.e. us?
Right. Well, someone also brought that up during the Q&A. Actually, it was Michelle Schweigman, who was on our show today. She asked that question as well. And I think that that's a piece that the filmmakers are still trying to put together, the screening schedule. Currently, they are going to be screened at the AR conference in D.C. They have a Seattle screening coming up, and I know that they're interested in coming to New York City, and they're also interested in a Midwest tour. They have on their website, which is boldnative.com, an email address, info@boldnative.com, for people who are interested in coordinating a screening in their city or at their campus, and I really hope that people do that. I know that the filmmakers see this as really a grassroots movement, and a word-of-mouth film. I really hope it goes beyond that, because I would really love this to get into the hands of someone.
In fact, I hope I get to see it.
Yeah, well,
I want to see it soon.
You will get to see it. And I mean, like I said, I really enjoyed that it was a blending of actors and activists. There were lawyers in it who we knew and activists who we knew. And it was psychologically very interesting, because I think that I and you and probably a lot of people listening to this could fit right in with the movie. It was really relatable, and it was interesting because there were a lot of arguments going on that we've had a million times, both internally with other activists and, you know, externally with non-activists. And it was very enlightening in a unique way. It was very educational, which I was surprised about. It really focused on the animals. I thought that that was an interesting element. I was a little afraid it would only focus on the people, but it didn't. It focused on animal issues. It showed a lot of footage, as I said, but not in a contrived way, in a very natural way. And you just totally understood where everyone was coming from in the movie. And it was, as I said, very surprisingly entertaining and funny, and the storyline really grabbed me.
Well, I just can't wait. I'm really excited.
Well, I'll tell you another thing to be excited about. I'm going to be interviewing the two of the three producers. Well, actually, Dennis Henry Henley was the director, writer, and editor. I'm going to be interviewing him. And Casey Suchon is the producer and editor. And I'm also going to be interviewing Joaquin Pastor, who was the lead in it. He played Charlie, and they're going to be interviewed for our Art of the Animal series.
That's so exciting.
Really exciting. And we're going to have them on our podcast for an interview at some point in the near future. So,
that's great.
It's a lot to be excited about, and I'm not sure how, but people need to see this movie.
Well, things are exciting here in New York, too. Rose 8 Breakfast.
Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah. I'm a little jealous.
I actually haven't eaten.
But I'm glad you're having such an exciting time.
I am.
And I'm just glad the idea that we're going to have a great movie.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had other great movies in the past, but
right. They
are some of our most powerful activism tools.
Yeah.
And hopefully it will reach beyond just an activism tool and we'll really reach the mainstream. I'm excited.
Oh, and just one more thing I want to add. The lead character, Joaquin, well, the lead actor, Joaquin, he started off as a vegetarian and he went vegan and really got involved with activism throughout the process of filming this. So it's pretty cool, the reach that it has, the possibilities it has. Don't you think?
Yeah, that's great.
That was our show for today. I'm here in Portland. You're there in New York City. I'm gearing up to speak at the Let Live conference this weekend. You're gearing up to... what are you gearing up to do?
I don't know. I have a little work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Things are dull here.
Things are dull, yeah.
It's Pride weekend.
Okay, how proud I am that it's Pride weekend.
The problem with Pride weekend in New York is even if you want to celebrate, it's so crowded that it's just too overwhelming.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's true. But I know that Mercy for Animals is going to be doing some leafleting.
Yeah, no, they're going to be marching in the parade, and I was thinking of joining them. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
I'm excited that they're going to be there.
Very, very cool. Really cool. All right, well, I'm sorry to be missing that, but I'm excited to be here in Portland, and I will be back in New York City for our podcast next week. I can't believe that next week is going to be our 25th episode.
I know. It's like we're old hands in the podcast biz.
Something like that. All right. Well, that's our show for today. Visit our website at ourhenhouse.org. Email us at info@ourhenhouse.org. Become our Facebook fan. Let us know what the story is and keep us posted on what's new and what's happening. From Portland, signing off.
From New York, bye-bye.